Thank Welcome to the April 24th, 2025 Disability Rights Commission meeting. I'll now call this meeting to order at the time of 5:08 p.m. Now, this meeting is open to the public and we will be recording. Please make sure your Zoom name matches your first and last name. We ask for all commissioners to have their cameras on if they are able to do so during the meeting. If you need to step away, please let us know so we can make sure we maintain quorum. If you get disconnected, please rejoin or call into the Zoom meeting. Staff and presenters may turn their cameras on when they are speaking. Members of the public should keep their cameras off for the whole meeting. I will now start roll call and please provide your name and your role. I'll go first. My name is Dr. Commissioner Wiley and I am the chair. All right, Commissioner Olson.
I'm sorry, Commissioner Olson, Lynn Olson. What else was I supposed to say? Sorry.
Oh, that's it. That's good.
Okay.
You said your name. Thank you. Commissioner Callen.
Good evening. This is Kathleen Callen, Commissioner.
Commissioner Dwyer.
This is Commissioner Dwyer. Thank you.
All right. Commissioner Maldo, Vice Chair. Commissioner Maldo. Yes.
Commissioner Melissa Maldo.
Commissioner Frost.
Joe Frost, Commissioner.
Commissioner Vandermeulen.
Commissioner Nikki Vandermeulen.
And Commissioner Edmund.
JC Edmund Estes, Commissioner.
All right, thank you. I didn't miss anyone, did I? All right, thank you. Okay, so we will move on to approval of our minutes. So let's review our March minutes and the staff can share the screen. Let's see if we have any amendments. And for clarity, we are reviewing March 27th, 2025 meetings, draft meetings. Notes.
That is all. Do you all need me to go back up?
Does anyone have any oppositions to it?
All right. Any no amendments? I will entertain a motion to approve the meeting minutes, the approval of the minutes.
Melissa, I say a motion to approve the minutes.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Yep.
I'll take it.
And in favor? None opposed? You can raise your hand or give me a thumbs up or say aye. All right.
Aye.
We will move on to determine if we have public comment. So we're looking at line item 87979. Do we have any public speakers, members of the public?
No one is registered for public comment.
All right, thank you. Any disclosures and recusals for any of our members of the body to make? Okay, if none, we will move on to new business. Line item 879800, welcoming our new Adler, Joan Pritchett, and our new commissioners. I will welcome Rebecca into this space.
So very exciting. We do have some pending appointments for new commissioners. Unfortunately, they didn't get their appointment letters quite in time for this meeting, but you will meet them soon. And then Joanne Pritchett will be our new alder. So hopefully Alder Pritchett will be able to join us for the retreat and our next meeting.
What district is Joanne from?
Oh, I knew someone was going to ask me a question. I didn't have the answer to
that. I did not have the answer to that.
19.
19, thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, is there any other questions? All right, we will move on to our next item, line item 87668, election for chair and vice chair. And I will turn it back over to Rebecca Hoyt. Thank you.
So I asked Giselle if she would facilitate elections tonight, but in the background, while we were so streamlined getting started, you all should have received your secret ballot via email. So if you could just check to make sure you got an email from me that says ballot DRC elections. The way that you'll be voting this evening is by replying to Giselle and I with your vote via that email. And then we are going to each count and check with each other to make sure all the votes are counted and make sure that we get everybody's vote via email and a secret ballot as you all voted on at the last meeting. So let us know if you didn't get an email. And then with that, I'm going to turn it over to Giselle.
Hi, everyone. I'm excited to help with the elections today. So as you know, we'll be electing chair and the vice chair positions. So we'll start with the election of the chair first. And then once we're done with that, we'll move on to the vice chair. So yeah, before you begin, I'll quickly just run through and explain the responsibilities of each role and also how the election process will work so that we're all on the same page. So for the responsibilities of chair, you will help set up the agenda items for each meeting with the help of the vice chair and staff, which will be myself and Rebecca. You will also lead all commission meetings. And you will, during the meetings, the chair will be the facilitator. So that means they will help keep the conversation moving in a healthy and productive way. So now, with that being said, before we move on to how the election process will work, do you all have any questions about responsibilities for the chair?
No. I have a question. So are we voting on our phones or something? I have to go find my phone. But like, was the email sent to our phone and we have to do it on the phone? Or how do we vote?
Whatever device you can respond to an email on would be
okay.
Handy.
All right. I'm going to go find my phone. I'll be right back. Is that okay?
Yep. Thank you for letting us know you're stepping away. We'll still have quorum. So
okay.
We'll continue.
Okay, I'll be right there. Sorry.
Okay. and Giselle, can you just clarify about the chair in terms of voting? Okay.
Yes. So for voting, as the chair, you will not be able to vote in debates. You will, like I said, you will be the facilitator, so you will help keep the conversation going and moving productively, but you cannot vote on certain motions that have to do with debates.
Yeah, so the chair only votes if it's to break a tie.
Yep, correct. Thank you.
And would we have gotten that from you, Rebecca, that voting?
Yeah, I just sent it during the meeting. The subject line is ballot DRC elections.
Perfect. Okay.
And while you're checking, I just want to give a shout out to Giselle, who like sifted through a lot of ordinance to summarize all of that in plain language. So can we give some Zoom love to Giselle?
Thank you.
All right. Take it away,
Giselle.
Thank you all. So we'll move on to the elections of the chair. So here's how the election process will go. So we'll start with nominations. You can nominate yourself or you can nominate someone else. If you're nominated, you can choose to accept or decline. If you do accept the nomination, we'll give you about 2 to 3 minutes to share why you're interested in the role. And then once all nominations and speeches are done, we'll vote by secret ballot, which is the email that you received from Rebecca. You would just reply and we'll receive. Well, I would suggest reply all so that Rebecca and I can both see the vote. So if you can, please do so. And then once we have everyone's vote counted, we'll announce who the winner is. With that being said, before election begins, do you all have questions about, again, the responsibilities or the process? We're good? Cool. Awesome. So let's begin. I will open the floor now for nominations for chair.
Does the person have to want to be chair? Like, are there people who have voiced wanting to be chair? I know that's a dumb question, but did anybody want to be chair?
Well, I am currently the chair.
Would you like to stay being the chair?
I would.
Okay.
Okay. Nick, well, then, can I nominate you then? If you want to stay chair, I would nominate you if that's okay. Is that fine?
Thank you.
Nikaya, do you accept the nomination?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Wonderful.
Awesome.
Are there any other nominations, including nominating yourself, if you're interested? Going once, going twice. All right, we will close the nominations. I know this will be a very difficult decision, but if you could please cast your votes by replying to the email, the nominees are Nikaya. Yes. And then Giselle and I will count the email, the votes via email.
Right, it looks like we got all the votes, and I'm excited to announce that Nakaya will be the chair again. Yay!
Thank you, thank you. Much gratitude, much gratitude.
Thank you.
About me.
Thank you, thank you. So with that being said, we'll move on to elect the vice chair. And again, I'll do the same. I'll explain the responsibilities of the vice chair and then move on to election process. So the responsibilities are they will help the chair and staff set up agenda items for each meeting. They will lead commission meetings when the chair is absent. And the vice chair is a voting member and they can participate in debates during meetings. Those are the responsibilities. Does anyone have questions before we move on to elections? Great. It looks like we have no questions. So, same process as last time. We'll open the floor up for nominations. You can nominate yourself or others. And then, if you're nominated, you can either accept or decline, and we'll go from there. Do we have any nominations?
I would like to nominate. How do I say that? Madole? Madole? How am I supposed to say that?
Madol, but hold on,
Madole?
Joe had his hand up.
Oh, I couldn't see that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, that's okay. Thanks, Lynn.
I'll back up.
But
I was
Joe.
going to make the same nomination, so.
Oh.
Well, then I'll triple it.
I'll accept the nomination. Thank you very much. I'm flattered. But
Great, great. Thank you. Do we have any other nominations? Going once, going twice. Okay, great. Thank you. We'll do the same. If you could reply to the second email Rebecca sent, hit reply all, and we'll see who wins.
Thank you, Giselle, for making this fun and explaining this very clearly. I really appreciate it.
That is fun.
Yeah.
And the confetti went
Thank
up.
you. I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Okay. So we just replied to that same one again, just a second time, right? To the same. Okay, thank you.
I have a question for Wendy. Is that your actual background or is that like
Yes. Oh,
a
that's
Zoom
beautiful. Yeah, everyone, I have to have
fake
you all over.
backgrounding?
That's the magnolia tree behind me, and my dog and I cannot get enough of it. We are out here even in the dark. So, yeah, that's, can you see it? It's pretty amazing. And then there's yeah, so that's the first tree to blossom, but there's some other trees just about ready to go. So, it's a short window, so I wanted to show it off. By next month it'll be a tree. Did you get everybody's? I think Melissa, we're just waiting for your vote.
I have to do it by the ballot. Can I just say, yeah, I'll not look myself? Does that have to be like that formality? Okay, I'll do
You need an accommodation, a reasonable
it.
one.
I'm just, I'm having a blood pressure day.
Sorry, did we get all votes then?
I think we're gonna accompany Melissa with a voice vote.
Perfect. All right. Awesome. Well, congratulations, Melissa. You are this year's vice chair.
Well, thanks. And I'm slow. I did send you the email. You should have gotten
Yay. I'm sure it's on its way.
it. I like that. It sounds like wait time, good accommodation.
No, I'm just slow.
Well, thank you, everyone. It was great to help with this election process, and congratulations again.
Thank you, Giselle. We appreciate you.
Was
Yeah.
nice seeing your face.
I know, right?
Yeah,
Just
I was like, I
beautiful.
never knew what she looked like, and now I have a face to match the name and the emails that we get, so that's pretty awesome.
You
Yeah.
are beautiful.
Come
Okay.
on, your work and say.
Words can bring
Thank you.
you down. Hey, I keep going.
Keep going.
All right. And so we're going to move on, continuing with our new business line item 87668. Oh, we did that. Let me move forward. 86780 DRC retreat date. We're looking at May 3rd, time from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. or May 17th, 1 to 4 p.m. And I'll turn it over to Rebecca Hoy.
Yeah, so we're on a roll with voting. This one does not have to be secret ballot, but we have our two most popular dates and times from the poll for our retreat. I would like to just do a, if folks are okay with it, just a majority vote in terms of which date folks prefer. I can't make that motion, but up to you all. So,
mine's not a preference, but I'm out of the country on the 17th.
I'm on the 3rd.
And you are? Oh, okay. So there we go. So, yeah. So we'll just do a majority one and then.
Yeah. And we can make, a hybrid option available on either date. So.
Okay.
Rebecca, did you say that we needed to do a motion to vote first? Or was I think I heard a call that we needed to do a motion that you can't do. Is that?
Yeah, I can't make the motion, but if someone wanted to motion one date or the other, then we could. It.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would like to move for the 3rd. I'm sorry, Nikki, but I don't know. Is that what you're supposed to do? Move to vote for one particular date or move for a vote?
Are you asking for the chair? I will entertain a motion to move for May 3rd or May 17th.
I'd like to vote for May 3rd.
Is there a second? I mean, it's been like if we're voting. And I was just like, are we just Lynn?
Yes. Piece for giving us
I'm
a second.
I'm seconding as well. I think the 17th, I think something disability related and a conflict.
Okay.
Or maybe that was my note that we might have it that day. So I take that back. But I still second it.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
I will. All
right. Is someone speaking?
Oh, I didn't realize I was on. Sorry.
Go ahead, Commissioner Model.
I won't be there and I won't be able to remote in. So you guys have fun on your thing.
So that's a vote no. I'm also a vote no for May 3rd. I won't be able to make it.
Well, that's an okay.
And Nikki can't make it that day either, so that's a lot of people.
And if I could confirm, I will not be able to make it
on the 3rd or the 17th.
The 3rd or 17th? No, the 3rd. No, 17th. It's the Creative Power Awards for Arts for All.
Everybody, get out your calendars.
I'm like, is there? I will entertain a motion. Is there some?
See, Joe, what do you? I see Joe's hand. What are you thinking, Joe?
Well, I was just going to share that I also have a conflict on the 3rd. Access to Independence is hosting a accessible gaming expo I had planned to attend.
That's right.
Yeah.
So the 7th. So remove my move to because it seems like that's only good for me on the 3rd. So see how many people can make it on the 17th, and then I'll try to. I won't be able to call in, but I can find out things later. I won't be someplace I can call in, but it seems like most people could do it on the 17th.
May I make the motion?
Oh, I will entertain a motion, absolutely.
I move that the Disability Rights Commission host its work retreat on May 17th. May I have a second?
Is there a second?
Oh, second.
All right.
All in favor?
All in favor? Go ahead.
Aye.
All right. Sounds like we will be retreating on May 17th. Time is 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. Thank you very much. All right, we will move on now to discussion items. Line item 87981, analysis of impediments for to fair housing choice. And there are attachments, the 2025 analysis of impediments draft, analysis of impediments presentation. And I will allow, let's see who we have here. Matt, take it away. Or impediments or impediments, one of the two, go ahead.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It is great to be here with all of you. For those that I don't know, my name is Matt Frater. Pronouns are he and him. I'm a community development specialist here in the city's community development division. Mid-30s, white man, short, shaggy-ish brown hair, clear-rimmed glasses, and a blue blazer. I am here with our wonderful intern, Kaylee, who has done a lot of really great work for us in authoring this analysis of impediments to fair housing choice. Kaylee is going to give a short presentation just of some of what's in it, as it's a fairly substantial document, 90-some pages. But before we do that, I just want to provide a brief background of what it is and why we do it in a little more detail than is in the presentation. So in 1964, was the passage of the Civil Rights Act. We did not get the Fair Housing Act until 1968. And as part of the Fair Housing Act contained within it, it directed that the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development further the title of the act, that is further fair housing through use of its funds. As of 1975, the city of Madison accepted CDBG funds. And we are, you know, required to take steps that affirmatively further fair housing for people, regardless of protected class status, but especially looking at what we can do to increase inclusion and accessibility for folks of any protected class status within the community. For a really long time after the passage of the Fair Housing Act, there was no real, how do you say, teeth? There was no real mandate of how to affirmatively further fair housing, how to carry this out, how to know as a municipality that you were doing the right things in the right ways. So in 1996, during the Clinton administration, they instituted what's called an analysis of impediments to fair housing. That's the document you have in front of you today. So that document requires us to look at data by major protected class statuses using the American Community Survey and using data from what we call HUD-CHAS, that's C-H-A-S, stands for the Comprehensive Housing Affordability Strategy. That is their own HUD data set that they take from raw American Community Survey data from the Census Bureau and retabulate it to look more specifically at housing. So as we go through and build this report, we use those two as our primary data indicators. And that's also what goes into what's called our consolidated plan, which is the plan that we submit to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development every 5 years, telling them how we intend to spend our federal funds. So this was a large undertaking that, again, Kaylee did a wonderful job in putting together that fed directly into how we use our federal funds. But we just wanted to come before the commission tonight to give a brief informational overview of some of the things that are contained within it and be available to answer any questions. So that was already longer than I intended. Kaylee, I will pass it over to you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Kaylee. Like Matt was saying, I use she, her pronouns. I have blonde hair and I'm wearing a plaid shirt. And I'm an intern with the Community Development Division. I have been for about a year now. I'm going to just pull up the presentation here and share my screen. Okay. All right. Is that showing up okay?
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Okay. So yes, this is kind of a summary of the findings from the analysis of impediments to fair housing choice. So just to kind of go over again what Matt was describing, an analysis of impediments is a requirement of HUD as a condition of receiving federal funds, and it requires the city to use those funds to affirmatively further fair housing. And this is through ensuring that there are meaningful actions to overcome patterns of segregation, promote fair housing choice, eliminate disparities and opportunities, and foster inclusive communities. And then it's also a process of identifying practices and circumstances that impede housing opportunities for residents that identify with any of the protected class statuses. So, as Matt was mentioning, a lot of community engagement is involved within the consolidated plan undertaking. So the survey that we sent out, one of the questions asked was, what is your priority for the city investing funds? And there were several categories that they could choose from: housing, community and social services, public infrastructure, neighborhood center and community facilities, and business and economic development. And the blue bar represents responses from community partners, and the red represents residents. And housing was overwhelmingly the most highly ranked in terms of priority for federal funds. So 70% of residents and 74% of community partners ranked housing as top priority. And to kind of build on to that, some of the top reported reasons in that survey for housing unaffordability were an increase in cost of living, increase in property taxes, and increase in rent as well. And when asked about barriers to living in a preferred location, the top three answers were unaffordable housing, competition in the housing market, and poor housing conditions. All right, so just to kind of get into, oh, sorry, I see a hand here.
Oh yeah, I mean, would it be easier to wait until the end for questions, or would you like questions as they go?
I'm good with either. If you're okay with waiting till the end, we can kind of just go over all of them at once.
Okay, I can wait.
Sounds good. So just to kind of get into some of the analysis here. Looking at population data, the green line here represents the population projections for Dane County as a whole, excluding the population for Madison, and then the orange line represents Madison's population. And from 2025 to 2050, there is a about 2% projected annual growth rate for the city, and it's projected to outpace the total population for Dane County, excluding Madison. We can also look at population changes by race and ethnicity. This diagram shows change in population share by race and ethnicity from 2012 to 2022, representing white, Black, Asian, Latinx, and all other populations, which include American Indian, Alaska Native, Native Hawaiian, and other Pacific Islander, and some other race alone, and two or more races. Sorry, was our hand
Yes,
raised?
this is Melissa.
Hi.
I perused through the 90s something that's very dense, and that was a lot of work required and went into that, and I want to honor that. But at the same time, we meet in such a short period of time. Are you going to be going over all the 23 slides that you sent us already? Is that
Yes.
your intention? Okay. Is there something specific that like pertains to the disability realm of this analysis?
Yeah, I
Okay.
can speak more specifically to data that's related to disability.
Or whatever Joe's question was or whatever. I think it's important to have dialogue and do it that way, unless somebody else disagrees with me.
That seems good.
Okay. And then it looks like Lynn has her hand up.
I'm agreeing as well. I read this. I was wondering if we could take a poll of the commissioners and ask how many people have already read through most of it and really just want to get to the meat.
Yeah, I've looked through it all today.
Okay. Yeah, would you be interested then in just going over data related to the disability data, or just kind of like some other general outcomes in terms of housing specifically?
Oh, that data disability would be good in case we have any questions regarding that, and then how it pertains to the commission would be great.
Yeah. So, yeah, I have a couple slides specifically speaking to disability data. This is utilizing data from the American Community Survey. So this data source is quite limited in representation. But here the pie chart shows Madison residents self-reporting disability by disability type. So hearing difficulty, vision difficulty, cognitive difficulty, ambulatory self-care and independence. And 9% of residents self-report having a disability or impairment within the city. And cognitive disability, or sorry, cognitive difficulty, the most common disability that was self-reported, has increased by 24% since 2016. We can also look at this data by race and ethnicity. Overall, Madison has lower rates of persons with a disability by race and ethnicity than the averages for the state of Wisconsin. So the green represents rates of disability for the state of Wisconsin, and then the orange represents city. So we see some disparities here by race and ethnicity. And then also looking at older adult households, 27% of older adult households are renters and 73% are homeowners. Higher income levels are also more likely to be homeowners in this household type. And 50% of older adult households are low income, 30% are extremely low income. And so the rest of the data really just speaks more to, I would say, looking at homelessness. There's disproportionate rates of homelessness of populations of color from 2019 to 2024. Yes,
I
Joe.
was just curious because I know of some firsthand cases. Does the data correlate any homelessness to disability ratios?
Not that I found using, so the primary data source for homelessness is, it's called a point in time survey. So it's a survey taken, I think the last day in January. It's one day out of the year annually. And it's largely reporting racial and ethnic identities, as well as household type. And believe there's one other think Matt, if you happen to remember what other things are reported, you can jump in here.
Yeah, I oh, my apologies.
Go ahead.
So this is Matt. I was gonna just jump in and say, first of all, I appreciate that the commission reviewed the slides so thoroughly. I feel that is not typical for when we go out and do this. So thank you for notifying us to just move ahead and talk about it. Part of the reason that we wanted to give the entirety of the overview is even though it's not necessarily parsed part within the data. Joe, I think that's a really good question and speaks to a lot of some of the overlap and intersectionality that you do get within some of the protected class statuses that we look at. And we know that some of those things have disparities within disparities in how the rates of how they come up. So within homelessness specifically, there are generally higher rates of persons with a disability. We track that through the coordinated entry system, though for this report, we don't have access to that specifically. just because it does contain client identifying information. And so it's sort of removed from that. I will say, just, you know, working with homeless services providers, they will say that there are high rates of persons with disabilities who do also experience homelessness, though sometimes it can be difficult to get those disabilities verified. So being able to get into a doctor, to get insurance, to get a referral, can create a sometimes lengthy system that makes it difficult for people to actually get those, get to a doctor to get that seen.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing. And just for the commission's consumption, I just like to share, because previously we've had opportunities or heard discussion of some of the shelters, and I've heard firsthand, you know, some of the struggles of some homeless individuals that I know firsthand in working in the shelters or dealing with accessibility or, you know, just accessibility amongst homeless resources and services around the city and around the county. So I think it's great just to hear more on that. So thank you.
Okay. I think it's also, I know you had reviewed the slides, but a lot of the analysis is around affordability and affordability limits as well. So overall, you know, disparities by race and ethnicity in terms of homeownership, particularly between white and Black homeowners. And this is also true with renter affordability as well. There's disparities in affordability for different unit types and has consistently been unaffordable. The median income or the median rent has increased quite significantly since 2015. And so this affects cost burden and is cost burden is disproportionate across race and ethnicity. And then, yeah, towards the end here, mortgage denial rates, again, the overall rate, white individuals have the lowest mortgage denial, as well as at the highest income levels. So all of this information, as well as information in the full report, kind of pulled out the key challenges that were used to help kind of inform the strategies for the consolidated plan and the housing strategy.
And I think I would just add on to that as well. So this report does tie, like I said in the beginning, sorry, this is Matt, directly back into our consolidated plan process, which dictates how we spend federal funds. We do also use information that we glean through the report to try and target other investments in ways that do support increased access for people at some of those intersections, right? So we know that housing affordability is a major issue. We know that there are income disparities that are infected, that are affected by rates of persons with a disability or education or race and ethnicity. And so a lot of our programs have built on this over the years to really target and to focus in on areas that have excellent access to transit. So we primarily try to support housing development increasingly and potentially solely in some cases in areas that have excellent transit access in the Metro Transit network. For some of our major funding programs, we have universal design and visibility requirements that are at least double those that are required through the state's housing finance agency. We have rehab and modification programs to increase accessibility for folks who are already living in homes, as well as for small-time landlords to try and offset some of the costs of those modifications as well. So while this is a report that contains information, it is something that we do take and use to assist in building some of our programs. So just want to make that really clear as well.
So do you have an idea of like percentages of people with disabilities that are experiencing, you know, housing struggles? Like, is there, you know, how do you budget for it if you don't know what the percentages are of people who are seeking accessible housing? Is there Maybe I'm missing something. I'm not sure.
I can attempt an answer on that, and if I miss the mark, please tell me and I will try again.
Okay, thanks.
So we budget for building housing and we budget for rehabbing housing. When we build new construction housing, lots of times developers go to the Wisconsin Housing and Economic Development Authority and they'll get low-income housing tax credits, which has requirements for instance, a certain percent of all of the homes that they build within the apartment, I think it's 20% right now, have to meet universal design criteria. So we have a minimum standard of 50% for developments that we fund through that program, with
That's good.
an additional preference for 100%, and re requirements that everything that built be fully visitable. In addition to that, all of those again are on key transportation corridors that are well served by Metro Transit and therefore by paratransit. And then the second part of that is within our rehab programs. Those again are generally open citywide, but one of the things that we make sure people address within them as much as we possibly can, as again a preference within our rehabilitation programs, is any accessibility modifications. We also market them and make them available for requests, for instance, for like reasonable accommodations that we can assist in the cost of that as a long-term improvement to the property.
That sounds good. I love that you're going for the 100%, because you just never know who in your household is. I was hit by a truck and was in a wheelchair for 4 months and couldn't be back in my home. It was horrible. And you just don't know who and when someone's going to need to have a fully accessible home. So then the family's uprooted if even if they don't start out as a household with a disability. So I think that's great, the goal of 100% universal design. I can't see anything less than that really when it comes to new construction, but that's really a great goal. So thank you for sharing that.
And then Joan, Nikki have their hands up.
Yeah, so I just had a couple questions. That first, I was just curious if the data captures the type of accessibility accommodations in, say, geographical locations to be more precise. I'm a person in a power wheelchair, and I need roll-in showers, and I've been living in Madison since 2008. And I've seen, like when I was living in the Blount street area of like Blount East Mifflin, the Galaxy Constellation and one other apartment building I can't think of went up, and there was no inventory of apartments with roll-in showers. And other landlords I talked to, and even just when I first moved down here, finding any buildings that had that accommodation or where the landlords would support that, so I'm just curious if there's a maintained list, of that a type of accommodation or the various types of accommodations.
So we do not have actually a publicized list of that. It's something that we probably do have internally, but it's not something that we have external facing. And it would take a while for us to gather some of that information, but it might be something that you're right, we would want to look into. The other thing, and just to be quite honest about it, that we hear frequently is those units do exist, but like you noted, they're just not available for rent. They're prioritized, but then ultimately rented to folks who may not need that modification. And so that's another thing that we're working on and trying to figure out some mechanisms for.
Oh, thank you so much.
My question is whether there's any work towards trying to challenge the court ruling by having another court case on IZ zoning, which Madison used to have, which required new construction to have 20% for Section 8 or individuals with disabilities. Is there any talk of reviving any challenge to that?
If I could ask, just for my own clarity, you're talking specifically about inclusionary zoning.
Yes.
Okay. There have not been, to my knowledge, any discussions of from the city of trying to re-enter that legal discussion. The state did pass actual legislation, so it is a state statute that does preempt municipalities from doing that. So any challenge to that would need action from the state legislature itself, and then be signed by the governor. We did recently, since we no longer can require some of those things through inclusionary zoning, we did recently, I want to say about a year and a half ago now, pass a affordable housing overlay to try and increase production of affordable housing again in areas that are really, really well sited. So the first one that we did, and that we rolled out was in the downtown area. And this is a voluntary agreement with developers where essentially they can build more stories on their building if they dedicate half of the additional space that wouldn't otherwise be allowed to affordable housing opportunities. And again, with additional units would be subject to additional requirements for city ordinances for type A, type B units.
And what would constitute affordable?
So under the city's ordinance, affordable, when we say affordable, that's at 60% of the area median income or under.
Got it.
Do you know what that is by chance?
Oh, I can tell you in just a second here. My apologies.
Thank you for being so knowledgeable, Matt.
I am Googling as we speak, so I will say one of the issues that we do face, and I know it came through in the survey that Kaylee talked about, it comes through in the data when you look at the report as well, is number one, high cost of housing in the city of Madison, but number two, really high median incomes as well. So we see fairly drastic increases in median incomes on a year-to-year basis, where I can say for a family of four, the median income in 2025 that those income limits are based on is $129,000 per year. Yeah. So when we look at a 60% income limit, and this is based on family size, that would be for a family of four, somewhere right around $70,000 per year for a family of four. And for a single person, it would be right around $50,000 per year. So anyone who makes under that amount would be eligible to rent that housing. You can go ahead, Joe.
Not a question. I just wanted to thank you, Matt and Kaylee, so much for your presentation and for sharing your knowledge. It was very informative and really enjoyed, reviewing the slides and consuming the data. And just wanted to say thank you so much for your time.
Thank you
Thank
for
you.
your time as well, and thank you for stopping us when you had already reviewed everything and wanting to go to ask questions. We really deeply appreciate that. We appreciate the time, and I'm sure we will see you all again. Thank you.
I just wanted to say, oh, Delin has one, but before.
Yeah, I was just going to make sure he wasn't leaving because I was hoping you were going to address it. Thank
I don't
you.
know what it is that you're thinking of, but I was going to
We
say to both of them, sorry, Kaylee, I stole your thunder. And like, he shot your,
okay.
you did a really good job on them. They were really good. I will like it, both of you guys, the data that you compiled is really dense. And I like when one, there was like page 79 was talking about the fair housing complaints. And it does say, yes, there are active discrimination that happens amongst three, places. So I do appreciate that acknowledgement, and I just wanted to say thank you again. But Lynn, what is it that you wanted to say?
Okay, thank you, Melissa. And I'm sorry for jumping in there, but it occurred to, but I know this doesn't have anything to do, but it spurred a thought on the non-ADA required tenants in ADA housing. Seems like it shouldn't be happening. And it seems like a problem that could be solved if perhaps we had a clearinghouse, someone like Access to Independence or ADRCs who had all of the buildings in town with TIF money or got funding for those units. We have a record of every single one of those units. And if one of our people with who needs that is on that list, that they're on that list. Otherwise, they need to go individually to each and every housing unit, housing project, and apply. And I think that right there is illegal. It's putting undue burden on people who are disabled access fair housing. And it just seems like a clear violation of the Olmstead Act.
I'm not sure how to raise my hand on here, but I completely support that with Lynn because it doesn't make it 20% of the housing is accessible if it's not available to people with disabilities. It doesn't, it just lowers that, you know, it might exist, but what good is it if it's not serving someone who needs it? So I, yeah, that just seems, that brings it down to 10% or 5% of the housing is actually available, housing is accessible. So how, you know, just agreeing with Lynn.
This is Melissa again. Yeah, it was really disheartening to learn that in 2020 that, like, you know, they have to, building developers that receive federal income have to provide these spaces, but then there's no like law attached to it. And I know that's not your guys's problem. Okay, I'm acknowledging that. I'm just acknowledging the problem that I deem is exists. There's no thing that says me as a wheelchair user should get priority to that, or that should be held for somebody who uses a wheelchair and or a mobility device, versus just it's open and we'll just put it on, you know, up for anyone to come in and move in and be in, you know, that's on the waiting list to fill up that space. I don't know if there's a way to incentivize that, or I don't know.
So I do believe that under the programs that we fund, that anyone who is on the waiting list with a disability that they identified within their application would move forward first for that unit. But that's again, if they're on a waiting list. Back to the other point, right? So I do have a note down of, because one of the things that we do in our division all of the time is work with other agencies, community partners, people who are out in the community to try and better get information out. And so I took a note down of ADRC was the one that I caught as I'm not good at writing and listening at the same time all of the time. I'm trying to get better at it. But of trying to find a way to better communicate what buildings have more of this housing available and how we can better direct folks to that so they're not just going to every building hoping that something is available. So I have that note down as something for us to work on, and at least think about and have some discussions about.
Thank you for hearing us. And Joe
And
has his hand up.
yeah, to share interesting notes, what you were saying, Matt, when I moved here, the ADRC actually did help me with their list of accessible housing, and helped to give me a nice, pick list. Mind you, it was only 12 different like properties, out of however many around Madison. But yeah, I mean, just to, see if even that could be further, and possibly like a partnership of the county and the city, to enhance those resources, share the information, I think would be a wonderful thing. I was just curious, a question for Rebecca or Giselle. Does the Disability Rights Commission already have members sitting in on some of the housing commissions or that, or even just listening in?
We do not currently that I'm aware of. We could always add that to our Accessible Madison updates, and I think Matt would be a great resource as to what commissions would be good to sit it on and liaise to. So Matt, is it okay if I share your email with the commission to reach out?
Absolutely.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, Matt and Kaylee.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you all.
Commissioner Callan
Kathleen has her
Oh,
hand
wait,
up.
there's one more.
Thank you. Matt, I maybe kind of back up on that, but I think that is something, knowing where to go. Again, when I've known folks who've been looking for housing, the same ADRC is definitely kind of my usual go-to, but I think that's also because that is something that matches a little bit more across the state or different counties and things like that. And I'm kind of realizing, yeah, more city specific, what would you recommend when, as coming across folks or needing housing, what is sort of the first place to go to when someone is looking? Because you mentioned the waiting list, and I realize I wouldn't even know really where to refer someone to that waiting list. Could you possibly give us some pointers there to be better advocates?
I can, and I'm gonna do one quick Googling as I'm thinking about
Fair.
it. So as wild as this may be, one of the best resources for open and currently available units is actually apartments.com. So
There.
all major property managers use that listing software on that site. And you can filter within your search by income and rent restricted properties. And I think you can also filter your search by accessible units. So as you're looking for things that are available, though, that's going to be the best website to go to look for things. There's a larger list of that we have partnered with the county to make called lower cost housing options. That's available on the Homeless Services Consortium's website. And it is just Homeless Services Consortium, and then low cost housing options is under the resources tab of that website.
Thank you for that. And I'll just, while I still, I guess, sort of technically have the floor, as it were, I also just want to say thank you, Matt and Kaylee. Sorry, looking at the name there. Yeah, both just for all this information, both the long version, the detailed version to get in it. And thank you both for pivoting so quickly on that. Kaylee, especially as an intern, kudos for, yep, life is not always how things put, how we go to plan. Things don't always go to plan. So well done there. I just want to
Thank you. I
acknowledge that.
appreciate that.
Thank you. I do want to give a time acknowledgement. The time now is 6:10 p.m. Okay. All right. Are we all done with this section? Much gratitude, and thank you. We will move on to line item 67538, Accessible Madison Updates. We'll be looking at Beyond Compliance Subcommittee, the Transportation Commission Liaison Report, Madison Lakeway, and Week Without Driving. And I will welcome Rebecca back to the speaking right here.
Actually, I think Melissa gives
Oh,
the
my bad.
update.
Commissioner Motto.
Both of my, I have nothing to report, both my things, because I did was not available to attend. So that's all I got for you people.
Okay. And that was for which section? A, B, C? Are you?
Both Madison Lakeway and Beyond Compliance Subcommittee.
Okay.
Unless Rebecca had something, I don't know if she was at the last meeting. I don't know if I forget every time what the rules are and when she can and can't speak. So sorry, Rebecca.
It's okay. For Beyond Compliance, the group is exploring new topics and projects. So more updates to come next meeting.
Awesome sauce. All right. We will move on to line item 80509, future topics, City of Madison.
Sorry, I think you skipped Lynn with Transportation Commission.
Oh, A, B. So we'll go back to B. Yes. So. Commissioner Olson?
Yeah, B is the letter, because that was what I was going to report on. They were talking about the BRT, the B route, the north-south route, and that's the next one that is going to be rejiggered to be an actual bus rapid transit instead of kind of a hybrid. In last night's meeting, they talked extensively about the stops up near the East University Hospital, the Far East Side one, and just changing a couple of those stops. And the big conversation was that a lot of the far out stops, like way out on the north side, are going to transition from the center corridor to the side corridor, to the, you know, to the sides, like the normal bus stops. And so people on the commission had to be, had to ask questions about, well, how do the ramps work then? And that brought up a lot of the obvious stuff that we noticed, that, yeah, they can use a ramp, but there's trouble getting you to recognize that you need to put the ramp down. So that was an interesting conversation. I thought was relevant to relate to you, that they have now started using some alternate kinds of adaptations for each bus stop, which kind of makes sense to me, but it does tend to confuse people. But I think that was the bulk of it, but the rest of the stuff is usually about intersections, and that seems less relevant to our group. So I will always give you information about the BRT. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Olson. C. Oh, Commissioner Amato, yes. You're muted.
Thank you, Nakaya. Thank you, Lynn, for sitting in on those long, long meetings and reporting back. And I happen to disagree. I think having something different each stop, maybe it's how it's designed, but it's not good for consistency and helping people navigate the system. Are we done at 6:30 or 6:15?
Do believe 6:30, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, so I want to make sure we have enough time. All right, next report, C, Madison Lakeway.
And I really messed that up earlier, Lynn. So that was me. I was trying to do both at the same time. I don't have
no apologies. Have to report.
Yeah.
All in love, all in love. D, week without driving. Mm-hmm. Nothing to report.
I think that's Wendy and Kathleen, right?
Yeah, and there's not really anything to report that I know of. Kathleen, did you know of anything?
We met once, and just to be perfectly transparent, I attend for work, so I clarify that, but I do sometimes maybe speak for both, but no, basically, but I just want to kind of let folks know, keeping an eye, or end of September is that last week. One thing that we did talk about possibly, especially for ways of including representation for those of us with disabilities that utilize public transportation, is to look more about sharing stories about how we access the good, the bad, and the ugly of it. And then also doing sort of, I think they were kind of using the term buddies, but ride-alongs and things like that, to invite folks to come along with us in terms of elected officials, so they can see what it's like and experience it, or offer it possibly the other way as well, to if they would like to perhaps experience the BRT or other public transportation for the first time, and they're maybe a little nervous, we might also be a great resource since many of us with disabilities are quite familiar with our public transportation system. So stay tuned.
Can I ask you, Kathleen, would we be able to invite them on peer transit?
Yes.
Okay.
That did come up. Yep.
Much gratitude. Any questions from any commissioners?
I would like a ride along sometime because I don't use the public transportation, and so I would like a personal guide by you.
All right. Well, hey.
I'm wide open too, Melissa. I use it all the time, so let me know. I would ride along with you anytime.
Same. Yep.
Much gratitude.
Well,
Thank you, commissioners. We will move on to line item 80509, future topics. City of Madison, keep in mind the time is 6:18. Commissioner Frost.
just a quick one, since it came up, I would just like to put on the note future discussions on the commission's involvement with Madison housing discussions and Madison housing commissions.
Thank you. Any other commissioners? Madison Housing, duly noted, wrote it down.
Wendy raised her hand.
Wendy, Commissioner Dwyer.
Is this where you can bring up something to put on the agenda? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, absolutely.
I would really like to put a discussion about parent transit on the agenda. And then the other thing I wanted to mention since we last met, I had followed the protocol to report like in, dangerous intersections, et cetera, and got through to Jerry Shippa. And I'm getting an audible crosswalk put in at an intersection I use all the time. And it'll either be in 2 months or in October in the next budget. But I'm asking him and just trying to figure out how to create like a safety audit for each district because in your area where there are unsecured crosswalks or road repairs that they haven't put the crosswalks back in, and the city, it's a big city. So anyway, I just think it'd be great if we could sort of look at how to increase safety for pedestrians and wheelchair users. So anyway, so I'm navigating the systems that it seems to be working, they just are saying they need people to point out things. So,
Commissioner Frost.
I was like, I will.
Time is 6:20. Commissioner Frost.
Well, more just a question for Wendy or Rebecca, because I was curious of those contacts, because I know of some crosswalks or some places I use myself, and in my wheelchair I can't reach the push button, and I was just curious to find options even for safety, because I just have to like wait for a light change and kind of pray.
Jerry Shippa. And you know what? I would say call him directly. So we could hope maybe put that can we send that number out? But I think that's the person to contact. He was responsive and he's in a new role and you're a commissioner, so they really should listen to you. So that's my suggestion.
I'll add the report a problem portal as a new topic as well.
Thank you. Any others? All right, we'll move along. This should move fairly quickly. Line item 62729, report from Common Council. Our new appointed Adler is absent. Duly noted. Correct. Move on to line item 15340, report from the Department of Civil Rights, Rebecca Hoyt.
Couple of just FYIs. We did have to cancel our BRT accessibility tour due to weather. So I'll send out another email, but the rescheduled date is Wednesday, May 7th from 3 to 4:35 p.m. And so that'll be at the we'll meet up at the Baldwin station and then tour from there. And if folks I know are always interested in BRT, just to let you know, there is a public information meeting on April 30th. I am also interested. I'm looking at different ways to do public information around the ADA transition plan, and exploring this like virtual option. So if you do attend and you have feedback about the accessibility of the experience, I would love to hear it. But that is also coming up. And then I did see a hand.
Commissioner Maldol. No, okay. All right. Mm-hmm.
All right. So just those two announcements. And then lastly, and most importantly, I know there's just a lot of stuff in the air and the universe right now around our beautiful bodies and brains. And I just want to remind you all that you are so incredibly loved and gorgeous and amazing. And I feel like that is a report that's not given enough. And special shout out to Nikki, who had a letter published in the Cap Times, and is doing us proud. So that's
awesome.
It.
Good job.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Yeah, thank you, Nikki.
Her hand is raised too. Commissioner Vandermeulen.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Yeah, RFK was driving me nuts. It needs to be rebutted.
The time is 6:23.
Unrelated. Rebecca, I love your earrings. Those are fun.
I second that.
Yeah. Awesome. Now, line item, moving on. All the love is still here. As you can see, this is, we love here real hard. Line item 24056, that is a report from me. Look at that. Report from the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Humanitarian Award Commission. We did not have quorum. We will be meeting on Monday. I feel like, did I miss something? I didn't miss anything, did I? A minute.
You got it all, Nikaya.
Okay. All right. With that being said, the time is 6:24. Anything before we, any questions, any sharing of gratitude? Yes, Commissioner Maldol.
Nikki, you have your hand up. Do you actually
mean she just to didn't take up? It down. She just All didn't right. take it down.
All right. I just want to hear that. Joe has his hand up now.
Commissioner Frost. For
the fun, since it was mentioned earlier, and I mean, I'm not tied to the event officially, but you know, the Accessible Gaming Expo is going on next Saturday at the Marriott in Middleton, you know, and Access to Independence is putting it on. I had to miss the one last year, but this is year number two, and I'm excited as a gamer that needs accessibility accommodations.
Very cool.
We are excited for you. Have fun.
I went last year. It was wonderful.
Did you? Oh, look, may I give a yay moment, Rebecca, for me as a chair? Is that okay? A yay moment. I will be speaking with at the NAMI annual Wisconsin conference on Saturday. So it's pretty exciting. This is my first time being invited as someone with physiological disabilities. You know, our brain tells our body what to do. So pretty excited about uplifting cultural humility and implicit bias so that our communities can come together, trying to demystify the stigmatization of mental health and our physical health. You know, we can't tease ourselves apart. So much gratitude.
Good to thank you. That's awesome.
And with that being said, I will entertain. Is there a motion to adjourn?
This is Kathleen. I move that we adjourn.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Good night. Love you all.
Bye. Thanks, everybody. Take care.